Okay, so it looks like we're live here today with my Shakti Rise Immersion spring session of 2015, and I'm really excited to be exploring the goddess energies of particularly Lalita this morning. And I have a special guest and friend, Kimberly Johnson. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, Jeannie.
So excited to have you on this call, and just having spent the last half an hour speaking to you about your work. So I'm going to read your bio to all of our listeners. So Kimberly Ann Johnson is an international yoga teacher trainer, structural integration practitioner, doula, postpartum care revolutionary, and single mom to a seven-year-old Brazilian daughter who's absolutely adorable. After years of yoga practice, a healthy and idyllic island pregnancy, she was shocked when her postpartum experience and recovery completely transformed her relationship to her yoga practice and womanhood in general. Completely torn and rearranged, and told she needed a total pelvic floor reconstruction, she became determined to find the wisdom that would eventually allow her to heal herself. She traveled to Thailand, Malaysia, and her longtime residence, Brazil, in search of holistic healing tools for new moms. Along the way, she was immersed herself in the old ways and used herself as a laboratory. Her biggest revelations came through the work of sexological bodywork mm-hmm. and somatic experiencing. She is the creator of the MagaMama.com, a virtual community and interactive hub for postpartum moms who want to heal the bodies, reawaken their libido, strengthen their relationships, and mine the full experience of motherhood. It's so beautiful. I'm so excited to have this conversation. And Kimberly and I met years ago in Boulder here at Richard Freeman Studio, where we practiced Ashtanga for many years together. And it's just beautiful to see the evolution of your work. And I'm kind of reading your bio. I got a little teary. Mm-hmm. Because, well, you know, the wounds that we inflict or have inflicted upon us, or however we see that, are part of, in yoga we would say that the wounds are part of the ability to actually find your light. And it takes almost, in all the myths that I know of, there's always some sort of wounding that is happening in those mythological characters. For example, you know, Ganesh having his head cut off is quite traumatic, and it's also a birthing of sorts. So, you know, when even the littlest thing like losing our baby teeth and then having our new teeth come in is another rebirthing. It's another possibility of something new. So When I read this, I thought, wow, you know, we all have wounds, and as we were talking earlier, like the physicality of birthing a child is, as I say to women that I know that are actually going through this, they'll say to me, like, does it hurt, Jeannie? I'm like, it is the most intense thing I've ever done in my life, period. Like, and it is the most beautiful. And we were talking about, you know, as Shakti Rise Immersion is really about helping men and women, particularly women at this time, understand their true empowerment. And so as I was telling you, Kimberly, that we're studying Lalita amongst some other goddesses this spring. And Lalita is all about this divine, sacred sexuality of the inner union of what we would call source energy with the outer union of our physical manifestation. And as we were speaking earlier, it really hit me, like, to have your pelvic floor torn and have to rearrange that and have to understand how to heal that, that's really on the horizontal plane. That's really asking us to understand the physical sexual, sensual aspects of our empowerment. And I would love for you to dive in deep, to tell us about your experience, the vulnerability of that, and the healing process.
Yeah. Well, in a way, it's very real, you know, and I think there's nothing more sort of visceral and tangible and real in some ways as getting a baby through your pelvis and everything that yoga attempts to do to teach us how to lose control and teach us how to surrender and let go is only an attempt to sort of replicate what childbirth actually is. And I don't know if you're familiar with this new book that's out, Yoni Shakti, but it's totally blowing my mind. And she says in the book that as women, we have natural cities. And perhaps the yoga tradition and the yoga practice has just evolved men trying to actually captivate some of the energy that as women we naturally have through our cycles and through our inherent connection, perhaps unrecognized, but always present connection with the lunar cycles and with the earth. And for me, you know, both of us actually, you know, there's not really a yoga teacher around that talks more about the pelvic floor than Richard Freeman, right? Like, we couldn't have really even been greater experts on the pelvic floor. Like, I had already had my pelvic floor worked on. I'd seen a pelvic floor in a cadaver. I hadn't seen a lot of other women's pelvic floors or vaginas or vulvas because I'd only had heterosexual encounters to that point. And because of how we are bipedally, it's not that easy to see other women's pelvic floors or vaginas. But I'd certainly accessed mine in a whole bunch of different ways. And I did have some sexual trauma up to that point, but it's something that was very conscious and that I had worked on a lot somatically and emotionally and in therapy. So I was just completely surprised, not only because as a yogini, I was really trusting of my body, and I had a story that a lot of yoginis have, which is that I could trust my body and my body was reliable, and birth is something that women have been doing for since the human race was around, and why would I be any different? And so there was a lot of shock and betrayal that, in fact, in a way, my body had failed me, that my body wasn't able to do it without damage, without being damaged. And what I now know is that elite yoga practitioners, dancers, and equestrian riders have the highest incidence of pelvic floor tearing because of hypertonicity in the pelvic floor. So even though, yes, I had a lot of, you know, I could rely on my body, I could have also used some preparation prenatally to ensure that I didn't tear. Or, you know, there's a lot of reasons for tearing that go beyond musculature and that have, you know, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in this whole process that I knew mentally and I had experienced in smaller ways earlier on in my life was just how healing has to occur at the level of all the koshas. Like, we have to heal our body. We have to heal our energy body. We have to heal our mind. We have to heal our intellect. We have to heal the bliss body. And I'd add the soul to that. Just doing pelvic floor exercises or just getting the scar tissue worked on without accessing the emotional component to it and without accessing the probably core beliefs that were activated in the birthing process that may have solidified energetically not only into my own body but into my daughter's DNA and sort of, let's maybe not DNA, but let's call it like a karmic blueprint. I am still working on today some patterns that got established during birth, which one, for example, one of them was that at a certain point in my birth, I was alone. My midwife had already come and my mom had been there and my daughter's father was there, but they all kind of left at the same time and I was by myself. And that's when things got really intense and I got inside. I was like hurt and angry that everybody had left me. Because I'm like, I'm in labor, so why are you taking a nap? And why are you having lunch? And, like, why isn't anyone here with me? And in that moment, I made a pact with my daughter, like, it's you and me, and we're doing this. And it was kind of, like, solidified, like, it's me and her against the world. And to this day, there's a really tight dyad between us, and I work on giving her safety farther from me and making space so that another person can enter into our dyad. But the healing has to happen on every level of our being. And that's how it's worked for me, that different stages of my healing process, different facets have been most critical to being able to feel my pelvis gel back together, to be able to feel a kind of contact and integrity, to be able to be willing to offer myself sexually again. And it's a long process, and our society is not good at long-term thinking. So I get a lot of women who call me at 3 months and they're just so frustrated because they're not back to their normal exercise routine, and they still are overweight. And I'm thinking to myself, and I tell them, you know, 3 months is to me as if it's day one. Like, the first 3 months, that's, you're not even, like, there's no reason to even think about your weight or, you know, you need like a year to even allow your body to start to shift back into a reasonable position. And certainly there's support that you can get along the line, but there's just this, our society has these images of pregnancy as like a weight loss and weight gain project, and, you know, weight gain and weight loss, and all the celebrities are like back to their shape in 3 weeks. And, you know, I see moms at the park 2 days postpartum, 9 days postpartum with their tiny little babies. And it's this ethos that we should just get through it as fast as possible. Like, the postpartum period is even starting to become analogous with depression. Like, people are like, oh, I have postpartum, or I didn't have postpartum, instead of this amazing evolutionary possibility where we really have to look at ourselves. And there's a grieving process that happens for those baby teeth, or for the shape of your vagina that was before, that is no longer. And, you know, for the relationship that you had before, and all the freedom you had before. And even if you love it too, it's all happening simultaneously. And it's a big privilege, because there's not many other experiences that we have in our society right now that offer us this real window into who we really are. So I really felt stripped down, and like the, what I could normally do to present myself, or the mood I could get myself into, or what I could generate through my practice, it was all stripped away. It was like, actually, this is who I really am, and I can't be a helper. I can't be a friend who's always offering things, because right now I don't have anything else to give. Like, all my, everything I have to give is going to my child, and I feel like I don't even have enough for myself. Mm. So it sort of gets to this deepest level of dependence and interdependence, and our society is so hyper independent, and especially as women in our generation, it's like, just learn how to do everything yourself and do everything a man can do and do it better, and we don't need to rely on anyone. And then our whole societal ideal is very much like the rugged individual, like, you know, make your own way, pull up your bootstraps, like, you can make it on your own. At a time when actually interdependence is what's really called for and necessary, but we don't even know how to do that. You know, it's like, it feels codependent, or it feels weak, or it feels vulnerable. And it's a hard lesson to learn, but it's really what is being called for at this time on every level.
Yeah, I really agree with that so much, that there's a couple of points that you made. That one, going back to this, you know, what I love about Lalita is that she is not only sort of spiritually whole, but she's physically whole. And I do feel like at this time, and what you're doing through your work, is really empowering women to come into their bodies fully and to find that the empowerment literally from your pelvic floor, which is, I think, the most potent place the place to find our empowerment. You know, I've interviewed Christian Pelmis several times on this, in this course, and we've talked at length about orgasm and the importance of being able to have an orgasm many times over in relationship to empowerment. And if our pelvic floor is damaged, and our emotional body is damaged, all those koshas, as you were speaking about, need to be in relationship with each other. And I just see this work as I said earlier, as revolutionary, because I look back at my mother, you know, and she was in the hospital being drugged up, you know, and having her babies, and then knowing that it was important to breastfeed, but gosh, it wasn't very, very much supported. So I don't, you know, maybe I got colostrum. I'm not sure. But I would love for you to just talk about that empowerment that comes from healing your pelvic floor, that physical healing.
Well, I can tell you that most of my clients, as we do the work, across the board, everyone feels more grounded. When they come, they feel dispersed. They feel unanchored. They feel like the floor is falling out from underneath them. I describe how I felt as kind of a floating dust particle. I just felt like I was floating around, and I felt lost. And so when you actually, and you know, I feel like where the yoga world has gone in some ways is this overemphasis on the energetic components without realizing that it's not separate at all. The energetic
right.
body and the physical body are not separate. They're just
mm-hmm.
layers of one another. So you can't really have a grip on your Mulabandha or your Muladhara chakra. You can't actually really be healed there if the pelvic floor is also damaged. And so many women are having birth injuries. Birth is getting harder and harder for women, and it's not separate from the fact that, you know, pooping is getting harder for people. Everyone's got digestive problems, and a lot of people are having difficulty with orgasm too. It's all related that birth and sex are intimately connected. You know, like in some ways, the best preparation for birth is this, like, I don't like using the word multi-orgasmic because I think it gives the wrong idea about what, because orgasm and climax are often used interchangeably, I don't think it gives the accurate idea of sort of like I call it the valley, but like the rolling hills of orgasm that are multi-orgasmic but aren't exactly necessarily looking like peak, 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 peak.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. being able to stay in high levels of sensation without going over thresholds is amazing training for birth, much better than learning a breath technique or filling your neocortex with information about stages of labor, which by the time you're in them, you can't remember anyways, and you're not sure where you are. So it's like supposed to be an orienting device, but it doesn't end up being extremely orienting at the time. But, you know, the more that we know our own body, the more we can own our own pleasure. And Lalita is a lot about pleasure and the sensual aspects of sex. You know, we have a lot of associations with the word sexual together with spiritual, or the word spiritual and sexual together with sacred. And she's really teaching us that those don't have to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Or that one doesn't have to be an expense of the other. But unfortunately, our sort of, in what I've come to realize more and more in the last 6 months, because more people are coming to talk to me specifically about their sex lives, is that we're giving so little time for whether it's self-pleasuring or whether it's partner sexuality and in interaction, that it ends up being this kind of tally-taking, like, I go down on you, you go down on me, you come, I come, and that all happens in 15 or 20 minutes.
Mm.
And the world of female arousal is so much broader than that, and we're so much more complex than male arousal, really. But our models are all based on male arousal, and so women's bodies, I mean, even knowing your sexuality and your sexual anatomy is a radical act, because the sexual anatomy is not even correct in most textbooks. So even if you did learn it, we didn't learn about all of it. And every time I teach even just the basics of anatomy of arousal, it brings up so much for everyone in the room that's like, oh, my God, how can I not know this? Like, how can I have gotten this far in my life and I don't know this? And as I mentioned before, like, this is a really big grieving point for me in my life right now, and something that I'm really hoping to change for the next generation, and certainly for my daughter. It's like, how can we have come this far? It's because our moms don't know it, so they couldn't teach it to us. And it's not correct in the anatomy books. You really have to be like an investigator to get the right information. But I think that's one of the lessons of our time, especially when you're awake, is that there's no authority outside of ourselves that's going to have all of the pieces of information that we need for our own healing process. And so we can certainly have, you know, I had you. Like, you're one of the only longtime practitioners that I knew that had kids and talked honestly about your healing process and wasn't just like, oh, yeah, I had a stage 4 tear, but I'm going to do third series anyway. You know, it's like, somebody who can talk honestly about the depth of and what that means. I mean, women call me in real grieving situations, and I get it. Like, I was practicing second series Ashtanga, or I am a professional modern dancer, and now I'm 6 months postpartum, and there's no way I would even kick my leg up. And I'm like, I get it. And that's really hard when you've used your practice as your anchor point, and now it's gone.
Right.
And it doesn't mean it's gone forever, but it is. I mean, I really feel like all of this is pushing us towards the feminization of sex. It's like putting female pleasure and female arousal at the center. That's why orgasmic meditation is like growing like wildfire, because all of a sudden people are realizing, like, actually, like, the first part of the orgasmic meditation process is just a witnessing process. Like, this is what you look like. Because as women, we have to, like, you can't see your own genitals, so you have to get a mirror. But to have someone just neutrally witnessing that is so powerful for all of us.
Yeah, that was my first experience looking at my own vagina. Was my own yoni was when I was birthing, and my prior to that, some of the midwives, the courses that I took with my midwives, there we were in that witnessing of our own female yoni, and it was like I could feel that part of me and that part of my family that was just like, this was radical. Like, I was having a baby at home, I was looking at my own yoni, like, this did not happen in generations past. And it was empowering, and it was also, there was a part of me that I had to, I remember when I had my first child, this is sort of embarrassing, but I was just, you know, I was in my nightgown forever, and finally my midwives were like, Jeannie, are you going to take that thing off? You know, and it was like, I finally could liberate myself to be nude with people around me, and aside from my husband, you know, and a lot of that I could feel was connected to shame and my family lineage, that we didn't talk about sex. We certainly didn't talk about anatomy, and nonetheless talk about my cycle at when, you know, I was 15. So,
right,
you know, pleasure
is even farther off the scale, you know?
Oh, totally. You know, I mean, that was something, you know, self-pleasuring too was something I had to find out on my own, and certainly was never talked about, nor certainly not supported. And so we grow up thinking that, you know, that it's taboo, it's wrong, it's not okay to actually know our anatomy. And I think this is why I feel like your work is so radical right now in such an important time, not only of you know, healing our own female genitals, but also in relationship to the earth. I love to take it sort of really out there. It's like what is happening with women right now is radical, and how then is that influencing our healing globally, our healing of the earth? I mean, I think it's all hand in hand. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that the earth, you know, is, she's always trying to heal herself. She's always trying to regenerate herself. And I'd love for you to comment on that if you have any sort of insight, wisdom around, you know, how we heal our own anatomy of the pelvic floor, and then how is that actually helping us heal globally?
Well, I feel like the lack of planetary balance right now, and the fact that our Earth, in many ways, while she is regenerating herself, she's also getting desecrated and not valued as much as she should be, that a lot of that lack of equilibrium is showing up in women's bodies. And I really don't have any doubt at all about that. And it's not that I have a lot of evidence for it. I cannot accept the fact that every woman who comes to me has some kind of reproductive issue, whether it's painful periods, whether it's polycystic ovarian syndrome, whether it's difficulty getting pregnant. I mean, the amount of women that have difficulty getting pregnant, it doesn't make sense unless you look at it on a planetary level and look at what we've, you know, our water supply is contaminated by estrogen. And therefore, like, my daughter's 7 years old and she's getting pubic hair. And it's like, it's not because she's eating hormones in her meat, because she's not. It's not because, I mean, there's no easy explanation for it. It's because it's the damage that's being done, the free radicals in the environment. And do you know why our water supply has so much estrogen in it? Because of the runoff from all of the pills, I forgot the word in English, contraception. So it's like the fact that contraception was given to women and seen as one of like this big leap forward for women, so that we could be freed from the household and be able to work and be able to have equal rights. And this notion that equal rights means having just, you know, to be able to be in the military and fight wars and to be able to do absolutely anything that a man can do. And yet at the same time, it's not like we fought for childcare. So it's like, okay, we have equal rights, and yet we don't have childcare. We don't have adequate maternity leave. We don't have the social and political supports that we need for to have families and not be depleted. And so here women are right now, I think at this point it's like there's more women in college than there are men in college. Leadership positions in many countries, including countries in Africa, a lot of the times because there's been major genocides, but like there's a lot more leadership of women. And in micro lending, it's far and away women, and women are, it's proven that they make more humanitarian decisions. But all of that is reflected in our individual health. And as each woman wakes up and realizes that her doctor doesn't have the answer, but she actually can go inside and find that answer, then that reflects in the whole community. Because what I love about teaching women is you give women a little bit of information and they tell everyone they know about it. It's like women are so hungry for this. Like, there's a lot of grief that comes up and a lot of sort of disbelief. Like I said, sort of a feeling of betrayal of like, how can this information just not be common knowledge? But at the same time, when I teach in a circle of 30, I know that every woman there is going to go home. And then I often get emails about their friends. Like, oh, my friend lives in Minneapolis. Do you know anyone who does this work in Minneapolis? Because she feels this. And my friend lives in Texas. And I talked to her and she said this. And it's like this knowledge is coming to the surface. And it's not new. It's old wisdom. But like people have been asking me lately, which is a good question, like, why isn't breastfeeding easy? Why am I having problems? Like, what would I do if I didn't have a doula? And I said, well, because before you would be in a household with other women, and one of them would have had 10 kids, and one of them would have had 3 kids, and of all those, somebody around there would have known, would have had one kid that was similar to yours, and that could help you out. You know, you wouldn't have to hire a lactation, 4 lactation consultants to come in and pay them $200 to help you. You would just be sitting around with other women who could help you.
Mm.
And so true.
And
I really believe that our healing is going to come in circle. And the more of those that we have in intergenerationally around certain things, around sexuality, around telling our sexual stories. I mean, women's spiritual stories oftentimes are running parallel alongside with their sexual stories. And the more that we're able to come in a sacred space and share about those and hear other women, then we start to take apart this feeling of like almost universal isolation that people are feeling, and like depression, and, you know, we're more connected than ever, but we feel less connected. But as we come together and we make these spaces where we can sit, there's so much relief that happens, because everyone has, it's like the story of the mustard seed. There, you don't come across someone that some element of their experience, when they're really speaking from their heart, doesn't speak to some element of your own experience or my own experience.
Mm. Gosh, it's so beautiful what you're bringing forward. And I want to go back to, I'm sure you've covered a lot of this in all that you've expressed so far, but this the study of sexology, can you explain what that is?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still learning about it as well, but it's basically learning about prana and kundalini energy and learning how to awaken our erotic potential so that we can be more fully embodied and present in our body in every aspect of our lives. So on the most general level, it's realizing that so much of our functional activity of the mind is happening in the brain, but that actually our mind is much bigger than our brain and is throughout our spinal cord, throughout all of those nerves, and that when you enter into an erotic space, you awaken a lot of unconscious material that has power and that can open up your awareness to many more aspects of yourself than you're aware of if you're just in your thinking mind.
Mm. It makes sense.
And that can happen. It can happen through fantasy. It can happen through exploration of just anatomy. I mean, a lot of what I do is, I wouldn't even say falls in an erotic category. It's just simple mapping, like showing women what is what. And I haven't even brought a mirror into my practice, but I'll probably do that soon. But just from a feeling perspective, like I'm just an inch inside your vagina right now, and I'm pressing slightly to the right. Can you feel that? And this is your ovary, and this is your cervix, and this is this. But the practice of sexological body work, which I'm in the middle of the training, is to also work from an arousal perspective. And that can be, it's an educational modality. So it's, I'm fully clothed and wearing gloves, and the person receiving the work is naked. And it really has a lot to do with where they are in their own practice, like what's useful for them. Some women, only have clitoral orgasms, and they're curious about what other kinds of orgasms are available to them and how they might access them. Some women are curious about ejaculation. Some women are curious. There's a lot of work that can be done in the parasympathetic nervous system, working anally and, working with the vagus nerve. And so it's to me, it's like feminism 301. It's going to the center of the center. It's going to where trauma either has occurred or is being stored, and it's going to the very center of our life force that has been so dampened by societal conditioning, by shame, by whatever other messages we've received through our life experience. And it's basically freeing those up so that we can be more of who we are. And I see people that have done 15 years of psychotherapy, and honestly, I think like one sexological bodywork session could get them just as far, because it's basically, it's going directly into the body, into the nerve centers, like especially for women, like the clitoral bulb has the most number of nerve centers in the body, so you're going right directly to a place where you can start to help someone really regulate their nervous system and be open to pleasure that's just for them, that's not about me, that's not about their partner, that's not about anyone else. As women, our sexuality is so much, I mean, that's why it's so odd for us to self-pleasure, because we even have this thing of like, well, why would you self-pleasure if you have a partner? And like, obviously it's better to have a partner. I'm in a process right now where we have to do part of our training is 30 days of self-pleasuring for 30 minutes every day.
Wow.
And it's a real challenge.
Yeah.
And it would be really easy for me to have 30 minutes, or it would be easy for me to have 2 hours of great sex with a partner every day. Like, I would have no problem, like, this is me personally, but just, like, finding charge, having ideas, wanting to do that. But 30 minutes for myself every day and, like, maintaining my interest and, you know, there's a lot of tools that we're exploring, like, conscious breathing and circulating energy throughout your body and maintaining like arousal levels so that you don't go over a threshold. And there's a lot of objectives to it. But today when I did it, I got out a mirror and I have my period right now. And it was the first time I'd ever actually seen the blood come out of my cervix. And that should have been awe-inducing, but at the time that I saw it, I was so upset by the position of my cervix, which was much lower than I thought that it was, and is basically mildly prolapsed right now, that it just opened up this whole level of grief for me about, like, how different everything is in my pelvic floor and in my vulva, even after 7 years of, like, directed healing work on a pretty frequent basis, and just how much work I've done, and yet how much more work I still feel I have to do. And so the first probably 15 minutes of this practice was just crying and grieving that and letting that happen and come through and be what it is and just being honest with myself about that and letting that happen. And then after that, once that wave kind of flowed over, then another wave came. But
that's a healing process, isn't it? I was just thinking about how I had a huge, huge, huge release when I was at Esalen a couple weeks ago, and you know, I was teaching the yoga portion of this retreat, and you know, part of my ego was like, you can't break down, and the other part was like, there is no way you're going to stop this, and I realized that, you know, again and again and again, that I wasn't going to eradicate my pain, that my pain was part of who I am, and that I was going to go in these waves of healing, you know, healing it so that my story doesn't have to be, you know, what I live every day, but it's present, but it's not sort of taking me out all the time. And that's something that I feel like my meditation practice is really helping me with, is not only come into sort of an amazing sensual place, which is just from meditation, but this place where I am healing on a very esoteric level, but also meeting me on the physical level of my life and my interactions. I don't know if that all makes sense, but I was just thinking about that healing process as a wave. It's a wave.
Mm-hmm. It's many waves.
Yeah.
And
I love this whole thing that you've brought in, though, Kimberly, around just even, you know, how you're in this course and you're having to, you know, self-pleasure for 30 minutes a day. I'm like, holy shit. You know, I'm in a 21 years of marriage now, and I have to say that I have the most amazing husband, who he's always been about sort of being this partner that has held me in very long, you know, sexual encounters. We have very long time. I'm like, oh my God, how many hours was that? And, you know, I just see him as one of these males that is, he would be just sort of like blushing to know that I'm talking about him, but just is able to hold me in a place where I feel so much of my feminine nature come through in our intercourse. And I feel like he's holding me there. It's I mean, he wants to have that pleasure too, but we really go in and out of it. And we, as both very strong meditators now, we are really feeling how we pass the Shakti back and forth. And that's something I couldn't have said 10 years ago. Like it's evolving and growing, and I'm grateful for that. And yet I know there's more. There's more for me to learn about my own anatomy. Just hearing you talk about this self-pleasure is like, wow, like, especially right now for me, where I'm going through menopause now, which is, I'm going through a whole nother grieving process of recognizing that I'm done. I'm almost done with this whole process. And then there's a whole nether level that has to be met around my sexuality and how I want to be potent for a very long time. So anyway, kind of you
well,
took me on this
route. I mean, I'm 40. I'm going to be 41 this year, and one of the other pieces that passed through today was just this feeling of like, wow, I'm more than halfway through my fertility years, and just now I feel like it's just like the past couple of years that I've really fully gotten into it and like understand how my cycle is this huge piece, offers so much wisdom to me, and noticing how sex for me is so different depending on where I am in my cycle and how the quality is different and what that means for me. And, you know, and even doing 30 days of self-pleasure, it's like, okay. And I don't feel like a victim to it. There's just a sadness about it. That's like, wow, I could have had this relationship and this knowledge, and I'm only gaining it now. And I guess that's a big driver for me to be teaching other people. But it's just like you're saying, like, okay, so you're transitioning into this other phase, and I want to be, you know, I'm going to be there too. And I want to be there having taken full advantage of where I'm at now. And the self-pleasuring practice it's so powerful because it's physicalizing what we talk about in terms of putting ourselves at the center. It's like really putting yourself at the center of your own experience, even because, like I said, I mean, even if I just had somebody else in the room, it would be so much easier for me to do. But like me with myself for 30 minutes, it's just sort of like, wow, how am I going to do this for 30 days? But it gets you out of your habits. Because it's one way that you usually self-pleasure, and that's the point of it, and that's the point of sexological bodywork, is like when we're in any kind of habit, then we're only really firing certain circuits, which basically means that like only part of our naughty structure is open and receptive, and we're not accessing all of what we can. And so when we touch ourselves in different ways, or we are touched, or when we're willing to risk and name a fantasy or act out that fantasy for ourselves or break a taboo for ourselves, that all is freeing up accessible energy to us.
Yeah, boy, there is so much more here that I'm feeling even another interview with you. I feel like there's a whole nother realm that I would love to touch on around, you know, porn and the misguided part of our society that is so unmet by not understanding a very authentic sexual pleasurable experience, and how, you know, with two young kids, teenagers now, I'm very sensitive to, you know, my son who's 19 now, you know, I think he's definitely sexual, that you know, I talked to him about the pitfalls of porn, and like you were saying earlier, here I am like wanting to go into this now, even though we're at the end of this. Maybe we could just touch briefly, but you know that, you know, what you were saying is that, you know, we're seeing vaginas on porn that aren't really, it's like seeing the model on the cover of the magazine that's like, well, that's not the norm. And
right. And the other part of it that I just think is really important to mention, and when I say feminization of sex, what I mean is not shrinking down all of what sex is to penile penetration. Because that creates a lot of suffering for men, because they think if they just don't have a hard dick all the time that there's something wrong. And and actually, people with fulfilling sexual lives together, most people will say it gets better as they get older. And that doesn't mean they're having a harder dick for longer, although it could mean that. But it means that there's a greater level and capacity for connection. And that can, and that's what needs, that's what people have to learn the hard way postpartum, because a lot of times penetrative sex is not what women want postpartum. But if that's all, if that's your whole association with sex is just like, just get turned on enough to get penetrated or to penetrate as fast as possible, then it is difficult because it can be painful and there's not as much lubrication. And when there's not arousal, there's not as much lubrication. And then you're thinking about the kid in the other room. But at every age, at every level, it's like satisfying sexual interaction and like losing your virginity is basically talking all about penetrative sex and the pressure to get to that point, to just lose your virginity because it's just this big thing that's hanging over your head, rather than like the full exploration of what it means to actually be in the creative space with someone else. I just posted something that you can look at and maybe you can post in your group about like, what if sex was a jam session? So that everybody just brings their instrument and, you know, you've practiced your scales on your own and you know your instrument on your own. But when you come together, you just see what happens. And just because you bring your instruments doesn't even mean you necessarily play. Or just because you played last week doesn't mean you have to play again. Or maybe you pick up someone else's instrument and you play differently. And you don't have to shame anybody else because of how they like to play. But it's like opening the doors to this huge world that is kind of shoved in a little bit of an aside and like compartmentalized into part of who we are, rather than like an, the fact that we're mammals and that like on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, sex is down there with like food and shelter.
Right. Right.
So, you know, loving touch is sexual. Eye gazing is sexual. Just touching someone's genitals without any agenda is sexual. You know, it's just such a huge world that's open to us.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Kimberly, we have to end this now. I'm so sad because
okay.
I feel like there's so much more. There's always more. And maybe we can do this again. And you know, maybe we could even bring you to Boulder, because I think women are really craving this, and I'm sure men also need to hear this. They need to know how to find their own pleasure. They also need to know how to be in relationship with a woman. So I hope we can do this again. And is there any last remarks that you have? I also want to let people know how to find you. So if you could give us your website.
Yeah, you can find me at magamama.com, magamama.com. And you can contact me there, or you can write me an email, kajyoga@gmail.com. And I just want to reinforce for women that to really trust their bodies. And if you feel like something's not right, or you feel like there's a part of yourself that you can't access, to follow that and to be tenacious about your own healing process, because it's of extreme benefit to yourself, but it's also a benefit to everyone around you, your family and your community and the planet. And it's essential that we all do this. because the next generations need this from us.
That's so beautiful. I'm so touched to be in touch with you and to hear about your work more deeply. And I just want to say you are revolutionizing the way in which women perceive their sexuality, their sensuality, their empowerment. And this is huge work for women and men on the planet today. So thank you for your work, and I know it hasn't been easy, and the healing process is ongoing, and I appreciate that. I appreciate hearing about it, and it's helping me to grow, and I know it's going to be a really important interview for this spring's session. So thank you, Kimberly.
Awesome. Thank you, too, and we'll talk later.
Okay. Take care.
Okay.
Much love.
Yeah.